Welcome to The Secrets of Success. By following the proven techniques of the guests who appear on this series, you'll learn that even successful people run into detours and failures, and how you can apply their success techniques to change your life.
You're now listening to the most unique show on radio, the show dedicated to making you a success. If you want to be a champion, all you need is resilience, says our guest, Dr. Tommy A. Watson. Dr. Watson, thanks for being with us.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for having me this evening.
I have to say, I have a lot of fun just saying Dr. Watson, Dr. Watson. I just feel like I should have a big pipe here and be wearing one of those plaid jackets with the pads on the sleeves. So
hey, it flows very nicely.
And once in a while, I may call you Dr. Tommy, if that's all right with you.
That's okay. Absolutely. That's okay.
Now, Dr. Watson, how did you come up with the title? Your book is The Resilience of Champions. How did you come up with that title?
Absolutely. Well, Bill, again, thanks for having me on. Over the years, I do a lot of speaking about my own personal story and giving tips on resiliency. And over the years, I had a lot of people ask me about how did I come up with what did I learn from my experience of growing up in the tough situation I grew up in. So the thing that emerged for me most was the resiliency factor. And I wanted to share those habits that I had obtained growing up in the tough situation and showcase them with others. And let them know that resiliency is not something that someone's born with, but it's something that we can all learn and adopt and can help us all be successful personally and professionally as well.
Now, I always love to hear a person's personal background story, and you have a most interesting one. And if you don't mind, I'd like you to start off and give us a little idea of your background.
Absolutely. I grew up with parents. I'm originally from Denver, Colorado. I grew up with parents who were drug addicts and professional shoplifters back home in Denver.
Wait. Did you say professional shoplifters?
Professional shoplifters.
Okay, not the amateurs we see in the stores.
No,
these were professionals.
No. Yes, absolutely. They were going to high-priced stores, and they made a living off of stealing items each day and then going out selling them to different people in the community. So there was no job situation at all with them. And most of the monies that they received as a result of selling clothing, went to their drug habit, their heroin habit first. So my siblings and I spent a lot of time in foster homes, crisis centers, motel rooms. In fact, my first year of birth, my mother was arrested 11 times, while my father was already in prison.
Let me just say, that was your first year of birth? She was arrested 11 times?
11 times. Can you believe that?
If you say it, I believe it, but that's amazing.
Yeah. So when you start talking about having life disrupted, it started very early on for me. And then it continued, going in and out of foster homes, living with my grandmother, my aunt. I met my oldest brother by pure coincidence in a foster home in second grade. And then, Bill, when I was in third grade, I actually was going to join the local gang. I was so frustrated, so empty, had so much pain inside of me, I wanted to join the gang because I thought that was going to be the place that was going to bring me peace. My aunt was pretty smart, and she said, no, you're going to get involved in sports. And, sports ended up literally saving my life. It gave me a chance to have a sense of belonging, gave me a chance to have a great male mentor coach before me, and gave me a chance to connect with other kids who had similar goals and dreams. So sports was everything to me. By the time I was in seventh grade, Bill, I got kicked out of our house in front of all my friends in the neighborhood, in which the folks from the neighborhood came in and stole all of our clothing and everything else. We couldn't do anything about it. From there, my family of nine of us moved into our seventh motel room, where we stayed my entire 3 year school. Six of the adults were drug addicts, and me and my little brother and little sister left to fend for ourselves. But sports continued to be my outlet for peace, and I ended up getting a scholarship to go to a private suburban Denver high school, not far from Columbine High School in Denver, Colorado. My mother and father were against me going to the school. However, they ended up going back to prison at the end of my 8th grade year of school, so I moved in with my other grandmother with my little brother and sister, and it was her wish that I go out to high school and do well. So every day from the inner cities of Denver, I took 3 city buses starting at 6:30 in the morning to high school each morning as a 9th grader. I would get back home anywhere between 8 and 10 o'clock in the evening when sports was over with. Did that for a number of years. By my 11th grade year of school, my grandmother had developed Alzheimer's disease and had to be placed into a nursing home. My mother, in the meantime, was on her way out of prison, no longer doing drugs, no longer doing illegal activities, but she couldn't find employment to take care of us. So she eventually turned to selling drugs to take care of us. And in the middle of my senior year of high school, while being recruited as one of the top football players in the nation, I received a daunting call that my mother had been busted for selling drugs and was on her way back to prison again. I eventually found myself homeless. A friend of the family opened up his doors to me, let me sleep on his floor for the remainder of my senior year of high school. I was shipped off to the University of Minnesota following that, only carrying a trunk. I got to campus, the University of Minnesota, playing in the Big Ten. I had never had an athlete come under my circumstance. I came there. My mom was in prison. My dad was in prison. My little brother was in prison. My grandmother was my last legal guardian, was in a nursing home. My oldest brother was in Denver involved in gangs. My oldest sister was back there on crack cocaine. My second oldest sister was in foster care in Iowa. My little sister lived with my aunt. Between my junior and senior of high school, I lived in 5 locations. And like I said before, I spent the last 6 months homeless, sleeping on the floor of a family friend. And I was banking on football to be my saving grace. But God had other plans for me. I ended up getting an injury. I went on to get my degree, and I said, you know, I could not go back to the situation I left in Denver. So I went on and got 3 additional degrees as well. So I have a total of 4 college degrees, and I'm a former school principal. And now I get a chance to do what I love doing each day, inspiring other people to be better, and motivating people to go after their goals and dreams.
Now, Dr. Watson, I know from going through your book, you mentioned that you were a former school principal, but there was a stage in there where you were part of a business that, what do they call it, that got downsized?
Yes.
I guess a nice way. And here you are, a championship football player, many degrees, and you tell in your book stories of standing on these job fair lines, or am I correct? Is that what they're called?
Absolutely.
And these are kind of minimal jobs, but you wanted to be working.
Absolutely. You know, I fresh out of college, I had a job, and my employer brought me in one day and said I didn't have leadership skills, and that was my last day, and she fired me on the spot. And I was like, whoa, okay, are you serious? I found myself at these job fairs with my college degrees, and as I was going to each line, there was a gentleman who would keep approaching me from McDonald's. He kept saying, hey, you know, we can give you the leadership skills you're looking for. And I said, oh, no, I have a college degree. I'm not going to work at McDonald's. No thanks. So about my third job fair, and no one was responding to me, I finally took him up on his offer and went to work with McDonald's Corporation. That opportunity there ended up being the best job I ever had in my entire life, one of McDonald's Corporation. And it was something that I didn't expect, but again, it was a dream come true. Something I would have never expected as I began, you know, seeking out my job opportunities, to think that McDonald's would be a place that would bring some value and perspective to my career, I didn't have any clue of at the time.
Well, now I see the word resilience, where that comes from, because if your life isn't an example of resilience, I don't know who is. But to be able to hang in there, and I know it wasn't just one job fair. You went to several of them, and you were on those lines, and you were literally the last one there sometimes saying goodnight to the people, hoping somebody would make you an offer. And you weren't really thrilled that it was McDonald's at the time, but it turned out well.
Absolutely. That was a kind of a hard concept to get my head around, you know, with a college degree sometimes, that McDonald's would be a place beyond serving burgers that actually adds a lot of value to a lot of people's lives, whether it be young or old.
Now, Dr. Watson, just that story alone, I'm sure a lot of people are saying, you know, this guy is the real thing. He's not the man who was born with the silver spoon in his mouth. He's not the one who had it easy. So he could say he went to college, he got other degrees. You know, for some people, it's easy to do that. That's expected of them, and they kind of move through life. But just those stories, any part of that that you tell us is amazing. And to get through all of that, tell us a little where the book is available, The Resilience of Champions, and is there a website we should know about that we could learn more about this?
Absolutely. Folks can go to my website at www.tawatson.com, and the book is available there online. You can also go to any bookstore and pick it up again, The Resilience of Champions, and then my life story is on there as well, a book called A Face of Courage. So either of those books can be picked up via website or either bookstores.
And I will tell our audience, I know a lot of time people say, well, I'm not really a reader. Well, if you want to be successful, this book is less than 100 pages. It gets the message out there very quickly, right to the point. Dr. Watson isn't wasting a lot of your time. He's not going to fill it with a lot of useless pages. This is right there. This is almost bullet points giving you what you're going to need. And if someone who went through what he did can overcome these hurdles and be as successful as he is today, you can't tell us, well, I didn't feel good that day, or, you know, my mom didn't love me, my dad was divorced or something. Okay, that's like one grain of sand in Dr. Watson's life. So no excuses.
We can all make it through. That's right.
Now, you begin your book with a chapter called Broker of Hope. What does that mean? That's an unusual one. I haven't heard that term before.
Absolutely. You know, when the foundation of being a resilience all starts with the word hope. And I call it being a broker of hope. Anyone who wants to overcome any obstacle in life has to have an optimistic outlook. And the word hope simply means having only positive expectations. It's a word that's used a lot in our vocabulary. However, it's a word that we don't necessarily spend a lot of time looking into. And there's two components that go along with the word hope. An individual who has to have hope has to have one, willpower. So it has to be this internal drive to want to do something. And then the second piece that is very, very critical that we miss oftentimes when we start talking about hope is the word waypower. So we have to start looking for models who are doing what it is we like to be doing, whether it be in the workplace, if we want to be entrepreneurs, or if we're students. We have to go out and seek out those individuals who are emulating the lives we want to live and begin to study their habits and begin to adopt those habits. So willpower gets you in the game. The way power keeps you in the game.
And I noticed earlier in the book, and I wrote this down in my notes, you say we see what makes leaders great when they're challenged.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about that. I said, well, of course, anybody, we'll use football as an example, can play football and, you're athletic and do those things. But the great leaders are the ones that get that pass or that run at the third down when it's really needed, in that tight situation, in the last minutes of the first half or the last minutes of the game. And that's kind of what life is about.
Absolutely, you're absolutely right. I had the fortunate opportunity to play against Tom Brady when I was in college as well.
You call that a fortunate opportunity? Most people would run the other way.
At the time when he was at Michigan, they were a running team, so he was handing the ball off. He didn't do a lot of
passing
the ball. Yeah. But now in the NFL, I mean, you see a guy who's getting it done week in and week out with players who are not superstars. He's up against a lot of challenges. I actually said he's probably the best quarterback to ever play in the NFL because he gets it done week in and week out. With players who are not great players, big name players, but he makes it happen. He gets it done. That's what leaders do.
Now, in your book, you pick a few people, and just in reading the examples you give, two of them that you picked out were Ray Kroc and Oprah. And you alerted me to some things I didn't know about them. We most of us know Ray Kroc as being the gentleman associated with McDonald's, but when all this came about in his life, he was 52 years old. Is that right?
Yes. Absolutely.
And not in great health.
Yeah, absolutely. And he was part of a failing business that was not working before he acquired McDonald's.
He was actually, wasn't he selling those things that make milkshakes, Mixmaster or something?
He was a salesman for milkshakes, absolutely.
Right. Uh-huh. And I think the other person you mentioned, of course, we all know who Oprah is today, but she was actually fired.
Yes. First job out of college, fired for... And her producers told her that she was actually, they didn't like the fact that she became too emotionally involved with her audience and that she it just wasn't pleasing to see that happening. And they actually stuck her in another show that was failing in Baltimore with no expectation that she would do well. Well, because of her ability to connect emotionally with her audience, she actually ended up taking that show on to be one of the top shows in the city of Baltimore and then went on to Chicago, and the rest is history. So, we just never know in life how those challenging moments can be the one thing that may launch us into the very thing that may keep us and connect us to our purpose in life. Even Ray Kroc at 52 years old, he found his purpose in life at 52 years old.
And with diabetes and I think arthritis,
yes,
he was still able to begin what today we all know as one of our favorite hangouts, McDonald's, and whether it's for the shakes, the hamburgers, the breakfasts, or just hanging out. I think almost everybody listening to this show has been there one time or another.
Absolutely. Those hamburgers everywhere. But, he took the McDonald's to a place that was beyond any fast food place that had ever been. But not just making McDonald's a hamburger restaurant, but making it a real estate mongo. Because most people don't really realize that McDonald's is a real estate company, more so than a hamburger company.
And you're right. If someone said check a box, I would say hamburgers, not real estate.
Yes.
It's different. Dr. Watson, at this point in the show, we're going to take a brief break, but we're going to come back. We want to find out more about the resilience of champions. But right now, we want to remind our listeners that you're listening to The Secrets of Success. My name is Bill Horan. This show is produced at WHPC 90.3 FM at Nassau Community College. We'll be right back after this brief intermission.
Hi, we want to tell you about a program with real appeal. There is a high-quality, low-cost paralegal studies program right here at Nassau Community College.
It can be your major while earning your associate's degree.
Or taken as a certificate program if you already have a 2 or 4-year college degree.
It can be the start of your legal career or a great second career.
It is also a great credential in the business world.
Many of our paralegal graduates go on to 4-year colleges and even law school.
You can complete the certificate program in several months. Paralegals work in private law firms, government, and corporations on Long Island and New York City.
You can start in the summer, fall, and winter, attend full or part-time, days, nights, or weekends.
Our tuition is low, and the program is approved by the American Bar Association.
For more information, contact the Paralegal Program at 516-572-7774 or email us at paralegal@ncc.edu.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Secrets of Success. I'm your host, Bill Horan, and today we're speaking with Dr. Tommy A. Watson, author of The Resilience of Champions. Dr. Watson, we were talking about your chapter that's entitled Broker of Hope. Let's talk about that word, because years ago someone said to me, that's such an important word, and he got me thinking about it, and this was before I knew you or knew of your book. And if we don't have hope, that's kind of the end of the line. So being into that word hope, that really carries a lot of weight in everybody's life. We hope that tomorrow we might meet that special person. We might get that promotion. We might win lotto. But if there was no hope for something better tomorrow, even if it's just a hotter lunch or a better hot dog or something, there's no drive to us. So talk about that.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, throughout time, you know, we can see instances where people have overcome unbelievable odds because they believed that there was going to be a positive outcome in the situation. You know, when I go out and speak a lot to students or CEOs or salespeople, I always talk to them about the fact that each and every one of us is going to run into a situation where we're going to get a no in life. Life is not going to be easy for any of us. But rather looking at the word no as an end-all, look at it as next opportunity. When you look at things in terms of next opportunity, it gives you an element of hope that things will get better. At some point in time, you're going to eventually get your yes. So we start talking about hope. Hope actually just gives you a chance to have a vision of what you're expecting, what you would like to see in terms of an outcome. If you lose your job, having hope will get you in a position where you can even bounce back to get yourself in the workforce to find another job. If you have a broken relationship, the hope, the belief that things will get better will be the thing that will get you out of bed each morning. But like you said before, without having the hope, sends people into places of depression. You have people who think about issues of, situations around suicide or what have you, because there's no belief, there's no positive outlook that things will get better. But in every situation, we can always find that there's been someone either in that exact situation or someone in a more severe situation that has overcome that. That's why it's important to, you know, have those stories of individuals who have overcome those obstacles. And the work you're doing here on this show here is amazing by giving those examples of success.
Well, thank you very much. When you talked about hope, I started thinking that if we just take a 12-month period, there's going to be chances in there and opportunities for us for some better things. Now, better things may be explained by just a new friendship. It might be a job opportunity. It might be a good book. It might be learning or just a good game of tennis, golf, or enjoying life with our friends. Or it might be that special person or that lotto ticket or some type of bonus that really makes our life, much simpler, much easier. But if we're not ready for it, if we don't have hope, we could easily walk by it.
That's right.
And that's what struck me as so important about this, that because if our attitude is, oh, nothing ever good happens to me, well, then we're not going to meet that great guy or that great girl. We're not going to buy the lotto ticket.
That's right.
We're not going to ask for the promotion, and certainly we're not going to get it, right?
That's right, absolutely. And when you find yourself in those situations, one or two things happen. Either you become a person who sees yourself as a victim, or you become a person who takes on a mentality of entitlement. And those are two places that, you know, can be devastating for any individual to be at.
Now, I know from your book, and I found this a very interesting term, when people lack hope, this leads to learned helplessness. Can you explain what that is?
Yes. So we start talking about learned helplessness. It's really about creating businesses around individuals who have very little hope. And we see it throughout our society. We see for-profits. We see non-profits who create businesses around a whole pool of individuals who don't have hope, and they continue to learn those same behaviors that keep them in the same situation. So we look at, you know, situations like generational poverty, where individual learns to, you know, the same hopeless techniques that, you know, grandmother or mother learned. I was very fortunate to kind of, in my situation growing up in my neighborhood, there was a lot of hopelessness around me. But I used to get on my bike sometimes and just leave the neighborhood. I would walk. I would get on the bus. I was constantly exposing myself to other things. But when you're only around those situations of hopelessness where there's nothing going well, you learn subconsciously how to continue to keep yourself in that same situation. So it becomes a mindset. And that mindset can be very, very devastating. We see it played out over and over again. It can be the individual themselves are kind of keeping them in that situation, or it can be an organization that's kind of pacifying behaviors and not setting high expectations, whether it be in schools or the workplace or what have you, allowing individuals to kind of muddle at that place where they don't take on that accountability for themselves.
And
you know, devastating.
I guess even people who might say, oh, you know, I'm at a point in life, I'm not looking for a new job, and I'm not looking for a new husband or a new wife. But I read in your book that hope plays a significant role in the prevention of illness. Tell us about that.
Yes, absolutely. You know, again, you know, even scientific research has shown over and over again, even with people who have been fortunate to beat cancer and a lot of other illnesses as well, they have been individuals who have believed that they would beat the disease, but also that very belief forced them to go out and look for remedies to bring them back to a place where they're going to be healthy. So again, hope pushes you not just to see greatness or positive outcome, but it also pushes your behaviors to begin to align themselves up with those same outcomes as well. So in the situations where people have overcome illnesses, they have certainly went out and sought out the right medical help to get things done, and even talk to other individuals who beat the same illness as well. So it's a very, very powerful tool that each of us can learn from.
And I think I read somewhere that even something with older people, they found that even if they gave them something like a plant or a kitten or a puppy or something mm-hmm. around them, mm-hmm. that they associated with growth and life, that kept them living longer and more productive lives in accordance with their state in life than the ones who didn't have the hope.
So absolutely.
Something to remember both whether you're trying to achieve more at that point in life or just kind of hold on or keep away the illnesses. If for no other reason, none of us want to be sick, just have good hope and it'll work for you.
Small thing makes a big difference, absolutely.
Now, once again, I want our audience to know, if you're finding this interesting and you'd like to know where I can find out more, Dr. Watson's book is called The Resilience of Champions, and he's going to tell you about the website and where it's available.
Absolutely. You can go to www.tawatson.com, and the book is available right there on the site, The Resilience of Champions, or Face of Courage, which goes into more detail of my story. And matter of fact, if your audience go out and get it tonight, they'll get the first chapter for completely free.
Well, I think that's a great way to start. And this way will give you an opportunity to see if you like what you read in that first chapter, go on. It's not a long book, so it's going to hammer home the messages very quickly. And if you're anxious to be successful, if you want a role model, not only Dr. Watson, what he told you, if you heard the first part of the show, what he went through in life and the things that would knock most of us back, any 5% of what he went through would have knocked us off the course, certainly me. And yet he overcame all of this. So when he says the resilience of champions, he's lived that life. He's gone through it. And I think it makes most of us ashamed to say, oh, I couldn't go out today because it was raining or I had the sniffles or something. these are not really real reasons not to be successful.
Those are excuses. That's right.
And Dr. Watson, it's Dr. Tommy A. Watson. And if you're looking for the book, again, it's The Resilience of Champions. Dr. Watson, the next chapter in your book is called Think Can, C-A-N.
Yes.
Explain
yes.
what that means.
Think Can. That's all about self-belief, believing in yourself. So after you start getting the hope factor going, then you have to begin to think and believe in your ability to accomplish whatever it is you're setting out to accomplish. And one of the best ways to do that is to think back on prior situations where you faced tough times before and you come out victorious. Because sometimes, you know, we look at this big giant before us and we say, wow, how am I going to slay this giant? How am I going to stay motivated to slay this giant? And the best way to do that is begin to reflect back on previous situations that you've had where you've had to slay other giants. And what it does is continue to build your confidence in moving forward to accomplish what it is you're setting out to deal with, though.
And I think that's also, it's such an easy saying. I mean, it's not even 10 letters between the two words, think, can. In other words, yeah. Can you do it or can you not do it?
That's right.
And if you think can and try it, just think at the end of the year, if you try one more thing a day and if you think you can do this, if you think you can make that sale or achieve that next grade or something, well, it's hard to go 0 for 365.
Yeah, you're right.
Right? I mean, most of us, even if we're not too good at something, we're going to get a batting average in the, like the professional ball players, maybe 3 out of 10. And probably, if most of the stuff we're doing is in our daily world, it's going to be more like 5 out of 10, 7 or 8 or 9, which is pretty high scores. But it's, no matter what, it's going to be a lot more than if we didn't even try.
That's right. You get a victory and play off of each of those victories, build on that victory.
Now, a lot of us give ourselves bad self-talk, too. So if you're thinking, Ken, I would imagine it's pretty hard to say, oh, I can't do this. I'm not as good. I'm not tall enough or I'm not fast enough. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think that's why it's important to go back to those role models, what you're doing with Secrets of Success, finding other individuals who have accomplished either what you want to accomplish or similar things that you want to accomplish. Because oftentimes what happens when we hear the news on stories, stories of individuals, we usually hear the glory part of it. We don't hear the grit. We don't hear about the fight that it took, the struggle that it took for them to get to where they made it. But when we begin to spend more time understanding, realizing that some of the challenges that we face in life are actually necessary for us to be successful later on. Because if we just get a free pass in life to go on to be successful, chances are when we get there, we're going to blow it. But when there's some struggle there, you're going to get there, you're going to appreciate it, you're going to be able to maintain it, and you're going to, you know, you'll be there for a while.
Dr. Watson, we want to thank you so much for being with us. Once again, our guest today was Dr. Tommy A. Watson. His book is The Resilience of Champions. And that website, once again, Dr. Watson?
www.tawatson.com. Both books are there, and all my contact information is there as well.
You're going to love it. It's a quick read. You can be successful literally by tomorrow if you get hold of this book and just follow
a couple
of the simple things that Dr. Watson says. Dr. Watson, thank you so much for being with us. We'd like to remind our audience that you've been listening to The Secrets of Success on WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm your host, Bill Horan, and we ask you to please join us again next week at the same time when we'll continue our journey to success.